Hey, Mark.
Yeah, hello, Nick. How are you doing today?
Good. We got Lisa Alva in the school. I mean, in the mm-hmm. what in the classroom? No, what is it?
In the house.
In the house. And Mark on the phone. Mark, you're gonna start with the news, right?
Yeah, that's about it. In fact, I know you've got a guest speaker in there, and I want to give you the time to devote the show to that. But a lot happened in the news this week that's worth reporting, so I wanted a good chance to relate it to you.
Okay, great. Let's hear it.
All right. Yeah, go ahead and get started.
Yeah.
All right. If you were with us last week, you know that Nick's in-house guest was Neil Chertkov, and he had another guest, which we didn't get a chance to announce, another Mark. I don't remember his last name. Do you?
Musgrave.
Musgrave. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, Musgrave. Well, anyway, Mark and Neil more or less had an exchange of ideas regarding the steps toward turning the tide of the events that have been taking place recently in the field of education. And if you want to hear that at its length, you got the chance as soon as it's archived. But in the meantime, as I understand, and Nick, you can confirm this, there was a follow-up debate between the two of them, I think, on Thursday the 19th. Am I right?
Yeah, well, it was not so much about education as about their political philosophies and the causes of the global financial crisis, but yes.
Yeah, well, we'll touch on that later, and as I understand, that's part one of a part two debate, which will conclude this Thursday on the 26th.
That's right.
Okay, well, I guess that'll be in the archives, too, for anyone that's interested in it, and to be honest with you, from what I could see of the content, it looked to be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But let's get down to, what's going on right now. If you're not aware of it, and you may not be, even if you're a UTLA union member, the leadership conference at La Quinta took place this weekend as we speak. The focus, of course, as you might guess, was what's going on in education with the RIFs, layoffs, furlough days, and so on. And there was an awful lot of blustering and let's say big talk there. They were talking tall there, Nick. They were walking the walk, but nobody was ready let's say they were talking the talk, but nobody was really ready to walk the walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is kind of characteristic of the union right now. We've got a union at this time that says it needs until spring to get up to speed to be able to face off against the district. And in the meantime, we have, for the most part, utter silence on the part of Warren Fletcher on down. The only person who ever says anything is David Lyell, and that's usually just an excuse for what's going on. According to them, if you read in between the lines, things must have been left in such disarray by Duffy, Forrester, Sokovitz, and so on, who, with the exception of Duffy, have all been retained, that it's going to take them until spring. Of course, we all know that's too late, but maybe something will come in this leadership conference. Like I said, I heard a lot of talk and a lot of ideas, but I didn't hear one single plan of action to do anything to stem the tide of events.
When was this conference and where was it?
This weekend at La Quinta.
Where's La Quinta?
La Quinta is, let's see, I think it's going out toward Orange County.
Okay. And you were there?
No. I know quite a few people who were there, though, that attended.
And did they, what was the purpose of the convention? Was it the whole, who was there?
I don't have the agenda, and there wasn't an announced agenda made available to us through the web, but various members of the committees and caucuses within the union who volunteered to be representatives there went on over to take part in the conference. There were, some of them were totally funded, others were partially funded. In other words, they might have to pay their way there and pay for their own meals, even pay for their own lodging. Some of them were empowered to actually give input. Others were only permitted to participate as listeners.
Okay.
And recorders. In other words, they could record what they saw and heard.
I didn't hear about this meeting, and I thought I was on their mailing list. But
yeah, isn't this a set de trois here? You know, something that we should all, I mean, I think they danced a Patty Doo around us.
They danced the Patty what?
A Patty Doo around us.
Oh, okay.
You know, because like I said, if you're hearing about it for the first time, and I think that probably would account for most listeners.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, as I said, I don't have a lot of faith in anything coming out of this once the heat dies down from everybody more or less releasing or venting. We'll see if something happens. I mean, let's keep our fingers crossed they actually do develop some type of action plan that people are assigned to it or volunteer to take part in and actually get something done.
Okay.
Moving on here, furlough days, still standing at 0 to 6, but that depends on tax revenues. If they fall short, furloughs go forward, and if the shortfall is very severe, the district will be allowed to shorten the school year by additional days. So we're still looking at the potential for more furlough days being added.
Okay. So right now it's at how many?
It hasn't been decided yet. It's still 0 to 6.
Oh.
I mean, regardless of what you see on a calendar, we're still in that area of flux to where it hasn't been totally nailed down. They may propose them, but again, it all depends on revenues.
And this depends on, and the revenues. And so where are we at in the revenues now?
The report is not, let's say, disclosing. What I'm saying is I can't tell you where we are right now because there hasn't been enough information released, although the suggestions are that the tax revenues are not meeting up to snuff. They're not what they were projected to be, which is not good news for us.
Okay.
So you want to keep that in mind.
So furlough days possibly on the horizon.
Definitely on the horizon. We need to keep watching. That's why, again, if we go back to what I was just reporting, this idea of the union sitting around until spring to get on its feet, that's ridiculous. We can't wait like that. We don't have the comfort or the courtesy of being able to sit back and be spectators or voyeurs about this.
Right. Okay. What else?
See, the LAUSD Benefits Committee reported a $200 million surplus. On the other hand, the district is still targeting veteran teachers before they qualify for their lifetime benefits and doing everything it can to reduce the coverage on those teachers that are called back from RIFs under different conditions and different types of contracts. So the money is there to cover the benefits for those that are there now and those nearing qualifying for their lifetime benefits and retirement, but apparently the district does not want to share that $200 million.
So you're saying they're finding ways of cutting people just before they get their benefits?
Yeah, but basically what they do with veteran teachers is, that's exactly right, they either start transferring them into positions they've never taught before or scrutinize them through evaluations, even if it comes down to floating accusations, things along those lines. The idea is to get them out of the system before they do qualify for that lifetime benefit coverage.
Okay, so that's just an ongoing thing.
That's an ongoing thing. That's going. The number of cases of that are horrendous. In fact, there's an attorney in, I believe his name is Lapicus, in Tennessee, fortunately an out-of-stater, that wants to launch an action against LAUSD for misusing the COBRA system to divert those people who would qualify for lifetime benefits to COBRA, where they pay for their benefits as a means to save the district money.
All right, and we can find more about that on Per Daily, maybe?
I'm going to try and make that available to you on Per Daily. If you are anyone who is in a threat of having your benefits removed or your benefits been suspended under any conditions, you'd want to contact this gentleman in Tennessee and let him know your situation. As I said, he's trying to mount a case, and the good thing about that is this. He is not from California. He's not subject to Sacramento. He's not subject to the county, not subject to the city, not subject to L.A. Unified. He owes them nothing.
Okay, well, I'd be very interested to follow that.
Okay, well, I'll get back to you with more news on that then, Nick, as soon as I can. Possibly by next week I can make an announcement and give everyone the contact information.
Great, Mark. So I'm going to talk to Lisa Alva soon about that survey that we took the other week. You remember that survey?
Yeah. We've got a little more news, though, that you want to cover.
All right, let's go.
A.J. Duffy is about to become the CEO for the Crescendo Charter School Group.
Okay.
Yeah, claims there is no conflict of interest there. It's not a traitorous act. From what I just found out this morning, he was working in contact with a couple of whistleblower teachers who reported Crescendo for cheating. And consequently, what he wants to do is to convert it to the Apple Academy, which would be a UTLA charter school, of course, with a weaker contract than what we have. And again, he still asserts that all along there was never any conflict of interest.
A UTLA charter school. Well, I mean, but that's kind of interesting, a concept.
Right. The concept is interesting, but, again, we have no idea how this is going to function. We haven't seen the contract that they operate under, and we don't know how long anyone's going to be committed to this contract. Can't say yet. Jury's still out on that.
All right. Lisa's smiling. I think she might have something to say about that. We'll see.
Okay. In the meantime, the next purge is secretly being conducted by the district against classified personnel. Following the first 2 weeks of school, they will reevaluate the need for classroom assistance. Those with 12 years or less are subject to layoffs or discharge.
Right.
So SEIU has sold out its membership.
So this is the one-on-ones, or who are these people?
Any classification. It could be a base assistant who covers the whole classroom. It could be a personal assistant. In other words, one who is assigned to a kid. It could be a general classroom assistant that, attends to, rotates through the general ed rooms. Any of those. They're all subject to this.
All right. And so they're going to start cutting those, and by how much?
12 years or less.
Wow. That's
no kidding.
Yeah.
That's they were talking about thousands of people there, man.
Oh, my God.
Right. There's also a new initiative. This is not a policy yet, but it's an initiative for a new form of evaluation in the district, which is to be conducted by peers, in other words, other teachers, parents, and students, but with no union input. So the union, of course, is very concerned about this, because by peers, what do we mean? Do we mean veteran teachers, or do we mean those that are just appointed to it, people who could have a close relationship with the principal? How qualified are parents and students to evaluate the instructional process? So this is, again, an initiative, like a pilot program. It is not a policy yet, but the district is going to try it out.
Okay, yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that today.
Yeah, and finally here, concerning the debate last Thursday night, which revolved around how people can affect change socially, economically, and educationally, Mark held the position that we need to return to small markets and what you might consider compassionate or fair capitalism. Neil responded to this by saying that it's nothing but a myth, that power concedes nothing unless it is forced to do so, historically speaking. Mark also held that that we need to separate the political system from the economic system, must be friendly to enterprise. Neil responded with that by politics determines the direction of economics. Enterprise exists to make profits, not to improve the conditions of labor or to profit share. Labor is just another resource. If you want the full text of that debate, you'll have to wait for it to be archived. And other than that, wait for the 26th for part two of this informative debate. And, Nick, that's the news.
Thank you so much, Mark. We got to archive it. I'm getting the hint, and we'll get a site up for that.
Well, I'll leave you alone for the rest of the show, Nick.
Well, call in if you got something to say.
Well, I'm sure your guests will have plenty to say, Nick.
And then you might have something to say, but I'll hear from you soon. I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Let's give that a try, Nick.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Thank you.
So long for now.
All right.
Hi, Lisa. Try that.
Okay. Good morning.
Afternoon. Good morning. So do you want to give your title or what's your title?
Oh, sure. My name is Lisa Alva. I'm a teacher at Roosevelt High School in the STEM school, which is probably now entering its second year under the Partnership for Los Angeles Schools. I've been a classroom teacher for 14 years, and I've done some other things while I have been in the classroom. I've been the accreditation coordinator at my high school. I've evaluated other high schools for accreditation. I wrote a couple of single plan for student achievement documents for Roosevelt. Some of the design team narrative was my work. And currently only a classroom teacher due to change in circumstances at my school, but like many of the rest of us, also looking for another position in another school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about that. Are you currently actually searching, job searching?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult environment, though, because there's not a lot of opportunity. And, of course, principals hire who they know and who they trust and who they feel that they share philosophy with, which is strength. It can be a strength. It can be. But sometimes what it has the effect of doing is promulgating mediocrity and
right,
not really getting fresh input into a new school site, which you would do by hiring a teacher with experience and a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, I've been able to get on some interviews recently because I'm on a displaced list, even though I'm not really displaced. But they have to interview people who are displaced.
Mm-hmm.
So you could get yourself displaced.
It sounds less hopeful than doing it the way I'm doing it, which is to kind of survey Ed Join as often as possible and talk to people, keep an eye on various websites. I'm considering looking outside of education too, but after 14 years, I feel a certain investment, you know, not the least of which is my retirement. And I'm not a spring chicken anymore, so it's a little difficult to start over, you know, here in the middle of my life.
Yeah, I guess and you've done so much that, I mean, you really have perspective on all these different aspects of it. I mean,
yeah, which does create a bit of a problem, I would think, for a principal who might not feel as sure of himself or herself to welcome someone who was, you know, an expert in a lot of different areas and has as strongly held views as I do. I've been thinking too about something that is probably affecting a lot of teachers, which is being displaced from a low performing school, a quote unquote low performing school, and what how that shadows our job search. It casts a shadow over me coming from a school that's been in program improvement for 10 years. I really have to dig hard and go back to look at my own data and my own lesson plans and my own kinds of evidence that I have around my own teaching practice, because to all outward effects, I'm not an effective teacher.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because if you look at the generally accepted measures of performance, which are API and graduation rate and the pass rate of ninth graders overall, their reading levels, those things have not changed. I mean, they've moved up a little bit, and there was an article in the LA Times last week about how partnership schools have not raised their scores as much as, you know, district schools on the whole. But, you know, I can tell you...
That's yet another thing to talk about.
Yeah, and many, many teachers, I'm sure, struggle daily so hard in the classroom to make lessons meaningful and relevant to students on an individual basis. I know I do. And yet when those children don't come to school, or they're not engaged, or they refuse to work because they don't have a pencil and manage to lose all the ones that you give them, it's very frustrating to put in so much effort and not be able to show any kind of positive result for it. So what happens, I think, in most human beings is that if you fail daily, you know, I'm failing. I failed all semester all school year last year to get the majority of my students to take me seriously, to take the content seriously, to participate in discussions or activities that were designed to be connected to their lives, and you know, no success.
You know what I'm noticing about you is that you're very honest about it, and I think a lot of people who do well at teaching, they have a persona, you know, or by do well, I mean they have good classroom management.
Yeah, and here's the other thing that I'm very, very concerned about overall, and it kind of feeds into this idea of teacher evaluation. I would be able to tell you, student by student, what that kid's learning modality was, what their reading level was, how they performed in my content area, which is English language arts, by standard. I could break that down for you per student by standard. And if you look at a student as a learner, you look at a learning profile, I can show academic growth over time, but it's not going to be measured by the California Standards Test or by a periodic assessment. It's going to be measured in different ways. So while I feel as though I'm failing when I, you know, look at their grades, I only saw 30 students all day, every day last year, and only three of them passed with a B or a C. I had no kid with an A in the class. But they all grew.
We got a call.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Nick, I can add some information to what you're saying right now.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Great, go for it.
Go ahead.
In regard to what Lisa is saying, that the initiative will take into account test scores, graduation rates, all the typical standards of evaluation, but it will not even mention the data that she's recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to argue for that too, and that's an idea worth pursuing, and maybe we could do it within the context of our union. The proposal that UTLA has laid out for evaluating teachers has 10 points, and one of those 10 points is allowing a teacher to determine what metric would be used to, multiple measures of achievement, right? So if I can show you that a kid is thinking cognitively, that he's solving problems, that he's learning conventions of writing and can score 70% on all the work that he turns in, unfortunately he's only turning in 2 out of 10 assignments, then that should count for something. And I'd like to see that incorporated in an evaluation system. I'd like to see a place, hopefully I'd like to see it in software, and I'd like to see it available online. I'd like to be able to put in my own measure of progress on a monthly basis, the way I do in my classroom. You know, I will print out those kids' grades and my children, not those kids, my children. I will print out my children's grade, like their current standing, and post that in the classroom. It's not a secret how anybody's doing in my class, but I want that to be included in my measure of success, along with student attendance and other things like that. But here's the real problem, is that who am I reporting that to, right? Am I reporting it to my administrator? Can I also report that to some higher authority, just in case I don't have a good working relationship with my administrator, or we don't converse, or we don't have that sense of trust that is really required for educators on the whole to move forward together for real student achievement? Can I also report that to someone who's different than my administrator, so that I at least have a touch point that's a little more objective? I expect this person to be trained. I expect this person to know what they're looking at and to be able to evaluate me objectively, but that's what I want. I want an objective evaluation.
Because there are really bad relationships with administrators out there, and administrators are people. And it's right now all in their hands. The evaluation is 100% subjective at this point.
I would be willing to participate in something like that, where I could put in my own data on a monthly basis. I wonder if the caller would too.
Well, maybe he'll call back. Now, but by your data, putting in your own data on a monthly basis, that's your idea. How does that measure up to this pilot program for evaluation?
I haven't seen the entire pilot program. I've had 2 days worth of an introduction to it last week at Mendez High School through the Partnership for Los Angeles Schools. I'm participating in that, the rollout of the evaluation system. Mm-hmm. And it's an online tool. I can describe or plan my lessons online using a tool that will help me make sure that I'm meeting the standards for the California teaching profession, which it's my job to do that. That's what I get paid for, and that's how I should be measured. But I can design my lesson plans, put them into a format that will align my plans to standards, and then print that out for both myself and for an evaluator. So here's the help that I see in this. It will help me pinpoint my weaknesses as a teacher. If I'm not good, and I'm not good, at facilitating open discussion, then that becomes an area where I can then focus to create a more, like a fully comprehensive and a better learning environment for my students. The thing that I mentioned earlier about being able to put in my own data, my own metric, that's the thing that I think is missing so far. I haven't seen it yet, but granted, I need to spend more time online looking at that evaluation tool.
Okay, so there's an online evaluation tool.
Yeah. Your principal can see it, and whoever, the second observer, because you should be observed 3 times a year by 2 people, one your administrator and one somebody else. So my lesson plans and anything that I put into that system would be visible by those people. There's also a self-evaluation tool where I say how I'm rating myself, and then I give evidence as to why I think I deserve that rating. So if I think I'm highly effective in the area of promoting meaningful conversation in the classroom, then I also need to put in a comment as to how I know I'm effective, which, you know, just promotes that kind of reflection that I want to do. I want to have that reflection for myself. It's at least a mental checkpoint. So I don't think I'm a great teacher. I know I'm a great teacher.
And so this is the pilot program that you're talking about. Okay.
For teacher evaluation. And there was also, your news reporter mentioned that there was no union input into the evaluation system. And I've looked at it, the pilot evaluation system, and I've looked at the 10 points that UTLA has put forward as being what they want to negotiate for, and they're not that far apart. Honestly, the two points of view are just not that far apart. I think if we really have children's best interest at heart, we can come to a working understanding for evaluation.
So I have been talking to some SANTI teachers who are part of New TLA, and they've said that they are going to voluntarily join the pilot program. And they're, and you know, one of them, Kelsey, says that she feels like it's, she believes the principal, Chavez, who said that he's skeptical about the pilot program, and this is a way to show that it's wrong if it's wrong.
Exactly.
To,
yeah.
To actually take part in it.
Yes. I agree with that.
Well, can we talk about what I think is like really breaking news in the world of teachers in L.A.? The thing that came out in the L.A. Times that showed that regular LAUSD schools are doing as well or better than charter and partnership schools.
Okay, there's something that we have to keep in mind, mm-hmm. and that is I think one of the comments under the article itself on the Times website said this, and I agree wholeheartedly. There's a kind of sifting that takes place mm-hmm. when it comes to schools. So when you consider, I'll say more about that in a moment, but when you consider LA Unified as a whole, you're considering Palisades and other magnet schools. You're considering all of LA Unified's high performing mm-hmm. schools, mm-hmm. but you look at the partnership schools, and these schools are in very urban mm-hmm. areas. We serve the lowest socioeconomic group, and then at a school, and I just want to put this out there, and I would love to hear other people's ideas about this. But I teach at a homeschool of attendance, right? Mm-hmm. If you live in that neighborhood, you go to that school. So at the end of the school year, a presenter asked the 11 children in my room, "Why do you come to this school and not some other school?" Okay, so one kid said, "I want to play football," and charter schools, pilot schools, new schools generally do not offer a full sports program that includes traditional football. So that one kid wanted to play football, and that's why he was there. Then two kids said they had bad grades and they would not have been accepted at their school of choice. Now, whether that's true or not, that's the perception. So that becomes the reality that we have to deal with. Three kids said that they did not get into their school of choice because they didn't fill out the application on time. They wanted to go to Oscar De La Hoya, or they wanted to go to one of the new schools that have been just opened in the last couple of years there in East Los Angeles. And then the remainder just shrugged their shoulders and said, "I don't know, it's the closest to my house." So out of 11 kids, only one had a desire to attend that school. Mm-hmm. So that I believe that charter schools, pilot schools, any new school is kind of they're perceived as being different or better by parents who are more invested. And so they kind of sift away, some of the students who have more support in ways that is meaningful. And we're left with,
you're talking
like
specifically
we're the default
about,
school.
You talked about the partnership schools.
That could be one of the reasons why mm-hmm. partnership achievement overall was lower than LA Unified.
But when it comes to charter schools, mm-hmm. It's said what you just said. The sifting mm-hmm. thing is supposed to go in their favor.
Yeah.
So why would they be not doing as well as LAUSD schools?
It would, I think, depend on their location also. Where were these schools?
You think more charter schools are in kind of tough to serve neighborhoods.
Yes, and I wonder. I don't know any. Well, I do know a few charter school teachers. They don't have a lot of good things to say about the amount of support that they get from their administration. So we have younger teachers mm-hmm. struggling so hard, maybe working with each other, but not with the kinds of supports that they need to really make a meaningful difference for all the students that they serve. Hmm. I'd love to hear from some.
Well, maybe Mark will call back in again. But we also have a survey that you brought.
Yeah, this is interesting. And it's not, I have to preface our discussion now by saying that I had only 16 respondents, and I think the fact that we're in the month of August mm-hmm. has something to do with that. But 16 respondents does not make a good statistical sample. We should have at least 30 respondents. So here's what we did. John Deasy had an op-ed uh-huh. in the LA Times about a month ago, mm-hmm. where he laid out 10 points for reforming LA Unified. and he stated them very succinctly. So what I did was to, I was curious to know how the new TLA membership would respond to Deasy's ideas, because these are his initiatives. Mm-hmm. So I took those 10 points that he made and I put them into a survey format and asked the new TLA membership to respond on SurveyMonkey. And it's the survey is still open. I don't know what the link is. I can provide it to you later if you want to post it online somewhere. I should post it on the new TLA website too. But what I discovered was that out of the 16 people that did respond, there's a lot of qualified, it's qualified, but it's openness to his ideas mm-hmm. about changing the way we do business in LA Unified.
Well, what are some of these ideas?
All right, so let's take a look. The first question was, in order to see, well, it's not a, quite a statement, and the respondents were to strongly agree, agree, no opinion, disagree, strongly disagree with the statement. In order to see true progress for students in LA Unified, changes to our collective bargaining agreement are needed. 46% strongly agreed and 20% agreed. So there you have 66%, philosophically at least, agreeing with the fact that we need changes to our collective bargaining agreement. Schools should have the right to choose all their staff.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Go ahead.
I wonder if people know, you know, why they're saying what they're that they agree with that. I mean, but okay, go on.
So there were some comments. One person wrote that, yes, we need changes, but not the changes that DZ wants.
I wrote that.
Okay. Another person responded, last hired, first fired is not protecting the best.
Ooh.
We have seen a third comment. We have seen true progress for several years. I don't understand the connection, but that's what the person said. And so the remaining nine statements kind of explain what those changes to the collective bargaining agreement might include. Schools should have the right to choose all their staff. Nobody disagreed with that statement. Schools should have the right to choose all their staff. Two respondents said they needed more information about that, but the rest of the respondents agreed.
Well, we had a question if because we talked about this. I brought this up on the show, the survey. If that meant also choosing to fire all your staff. Because it says you have the right to choose your staff.
Mm-hmm.
That could mean hire and fire.
Right, right. And I'm thinking now that does that include your principal?
Right, yeah.
And then if Mr. Deasy believes that teachers should have the right to choose all their staff, and yet he denied the community in Verdugo Hills the principal of their choice, what's the connection or what's the justification for his action? That wasn't discussed in the article that I read, the reason why he denied that principal that had been chosen by the community.
Yeah, because my basic impression about all this is it's ways of kind of eroding union power while doing nothing to address, you know, arbitrary administrator power.
Yeah, that said, though, I don't know if I mentioned this, but throughout the teacher evaluation pilot, there were kind of disclaimers, for lack of a better term. There were notices along the way that the evaluation system was a pilot only, and the specifics of it had not been negotiated with the union, and that its final form would depend on those negotiations.
Are we just talking about the pilot evaluation program when we're talking about these
Just going back to the evaluation.
I'm talking about DZ's general drift.
Yeah, yeah.
Which seems to be about, you know, curtailing union
disempowering
power. Disempowering the union. I mean, it all seems to be pointed...
Can you define what you mean by disempowering?
Well, when you say, you know, you guys don't really want to follow the union contract, do you? You don't want to be hampered by that thing, that big, thick contract? No, right? You want to be able to opt out of it. I mean, it sounds so reasonable. Of course, who wants to be bound by, you know, an agreement that's old? You know, I mean,
well, a responsible person would want to know what the alternative was specifically.
Yeah,
right?
And he's not really coming up with an alternative. He's saying you just want us to be able to sort of go around it.
I'm looking for the question about thin contracts. There it is. The contract should guarantee that any school whose staff votes to have an elect-to-work agreement would be allowed to. So 25% of our respondents had no opinion or wanted more information. One person strongly disagreed. But 68% agreed with the statement. The contract... Oops, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, the contract should guarantee that any school whose staff votes to have an elect-to-work agreement would be allowed to.
So, and what does elect-to-work mean?
That's basically your thin contract.
So, now if you're looking for a job,
mm-hmm.
and a school agrees to hire you, but only under the condition that you take the, quote, thin contract.
If you want that job, you have to sign that agreement.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really not going to be so much necessarily about teachers deciding they would rather have a thinner contract because it makes their lives better. It's going to be about schools deciding they want a thinner contract and teachers either accepting that or not having a job.
And it's my understanding that new pilot schools opening are all choosing,
yeah.
quote unquote, choosing the yeah. thin contract.
Of course. And then once you get there, I just applied to pilot school, which I would love to work at, you know, but you have to work up to 100 hours for free outside of school. So that could be for, you know, cafeteria monitoring. It could be just they could decide to go on retreats. And personally, I want to do all that because I never got the collaboration I was looking for at the schools I was working at. But, you know, it's important to realize what the effects of allowing elect to work are. It's going to mean more work. It's going to mean fewer of the protections that the union has fought for a very long time.
It can mean, too, that you're subject to your administrator's arbitrary whim. Mm-hmm. I have a girlfriend who mm-hmm. was planning to work at a new pilot school in September, mm-hmm. but the last-minute requirements of her administration were mm-hmm. arduous. They called her on a Monday afternoon and told her that they were having a mandatory Monday evening meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when she threw in the towel because it was the last of dozens of last-minute kinds of things like that, which you can expect if you have new people who are opening a new school and they're working 24/7 to achieve their vision. But it doesn't create a very realistic conditions for a single mother of two.
Yeah,
who
that's
wants
right.
to be a teacher?
It creates conditions for that only really workaholics can succeed in. I mean,
yeah.
You're talking about, yeah.
Which is what made me smile about the Duffy news, that he was going to be a CEO of a union-led charter. I just had a little comic book vision of what that might look like.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you take some of the more vocal people from the House of Reps,
mm-hmm.
let's say, you know, you just skim off the most vocal,
yeah.
the top 20, and you put them in a school together. I don't know. It just seemed comic.
It would be comic.
I'm sorry. That was disrespectful.
I wonder. Yeah. I wonder.
But you're right. I mean, in a successful new school, a pilot school, everyone's going to have the same vision, and everyone should have the same vision anyway. But it should yeah. be regulated, you know, to labor law.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of two minds about it because personally, yeah. I would like to work at a school where everybody's motivated, everybody's on the same page. They do have retreats and they, you know, they work on their lunches, you know, because you're going to have to in order to do a good job anyway.
This is where you need supportive leadership, though. It takes leadership to pull something like that off. And it takes a leader who's not egotistical, who's supportive and not directive and open-minded and loving, really, but at the same time, results-oriented. So that's a very special person, right? I mean, I have to be able to go to you and say, okay, Nick, what are you measuring in your classroom this semester? Where are you looking for growth in your students?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see that by next Tuesday. Could you have that for me? And then if you don't have it by Tuesday, I would have to tell you, Nick, I need to see that tomorrow. Right? I mean, if I'm your principal, I need to hold you accountable, but I need to do it in a humane way.
I'm assuming it's Mark.
Hello, Nick. Yeah, I got a couple things I can add to what you're saying.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Just in regard to some of this, you know, as far as Lisa's proposals go for the means that she's looking to initiate for self-evaluation and the difficulties that she's that's experiencing in doing that. Now, if she would care to put together something in the way of a proposal for that and include what she's experienced in the process as far as resistance inside of a couple of pages, I'd be more than happy to submit it to perdaily.com, and we may be able to get that published.
Cool. She's nodding her head.
Okay, yeah. So I'm happy to put together an outline.
Yeah, just go to perdaily.com. Okay. You'll find an email address for Leonard Eisenberg. Put together what you feel the more realistic form of evaluation would be, because I can guarantee you this, we would not be opposed to that. I'm not asking for this so that we can pick it apart. That's not at all the case. I'd rather show it as an alternative means of evaluation, because one of the specific goals of perdaily.com is to develop a new model for public education, not just in regard to LA Unified or the state, but nationwide, and that would certainly include the means by which teachers are evaluated.
Yeah, in a nutshell, I'd like to be able to name my own metric, name the thing that I want measured, and then I only want to be compared to myself at first. I want my students' progress to be compared, like, let's say, from September to January to June. That's all I want. I mean, I don't want to be compared to anybody else. They're going to be using different methods, and they're teaching different things and different standards. And if I don't have true collaboration, I don't want to be evaluated against anybody else. I just want to have my growth evaluated personally, to at least for starters, right?
Did you hear that, Mark?
I sure do. And I find it to be very appealing, but we need to have that in a format that we can show in print that substantiates itself.
You okay. Want to do that, Lisa?
Yeah, I'm game.
She says she'll do it.
Give me a week.
Give her a week. Mark?
Yes?
So she says in a week.
Oh, that would do quite fine. And really, remember, it's perdaily.com. You'll find a link to Leonard Eisenberg's email address. And send it, and I'll inform him ahead of time by this evening that we have a sample piece coming that we want to evaluate for publication.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, yeah, that'll Mark. Work. Okay. Yeah, and I can also add to the experience of these pilot school teachers, being a retired teacher and having gone through that process of putting in endless hours of extra time. Although no one took it into account or no one paid any attention to it, that, it's an arduous process. And I'm going to say it's not for everyone. One of the things that you have to take into account when you envelop yourself or you allow yourself to be ensconced in this sort of process or this sort of program is this. You also have to constantly be aware of your own life and your health. If you allow these systems, regardless of how promising or social remediating they may seem, take away your own life. In other words, take away all of your private time, take away your self-development, then it goes wrong. What I tell all people who are going into teaching is that ask me, and it happens quite frequently, young teachers, tell them, remember, the field of knowledge is expansive. It's like the universe. It's one universe built upon another. There's an entire cosmos of knowledge to be known, whether you choose evolution or sociology or anthropology or history or whatever you take. You should never cease to develop yourself beyond that classroom. If you become nothing but the classroom, you are monodimensional and your life is heading down to an ending which will be go out with a whimper rather than a bang. You have to factor all of these things into it. You cannot forget your own identity. That has to go on. If all your time is devoted to that classroom, again, you have a monodimensional life that leads to nothing at all in the end. Sure, you served everyone else, but you did not serve yourself. And you should always be aware of serving yourself as a priority. That's what makes it all worthwhile in the end, to be able to look back on it and know that you developed as a person, at the same time made that contribution to society. You can't let districts or anyone else rob you of your identity, and that's what they do. They rob you of your identity, they rob you of your time, they rob you of your health. You cannot allow that to happen.
That's right. All right, thanks, Mark.
You bet.
Talk to you soon. Bye. It becomes, I would think, like a little cultish if you let it go that far.
That said, though, when teachers are of one mind, solutions happen that are so outside the box that they're remarkable. Right. And when I think about the conditions under which our children live sometimes, if school if everybody at school is on the same page and they're all together and they all treat me the same way and they all have the same expectations of me, then I can go to school and I can more or less separate that experience from the rest of my life experience. And when I'm at school, then I'm held to a different standard as long as everybody is of one mind. So yeah, it's a double-edged sword. It can be a really good one, but it does, teachers need nurturing too.
Yeah, I don't know how Daisy wants to build it into the contract to be able to opt out of the contract.
Oh, yes.
And so what does that do to the contract? I mean, does that seriously weaken the contract or is it okay? Actually, maybe it's great to have an escape valve. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one because what I see happening is kind of a polarization of school types. And on one hand, you have your traditional comprehensive high school led by one principal and several assistant principals serving 2,000 or more students. And then you have this other structure of a pilot school where teachers do more. And there's one school that I know of that has two teacher leaders that really make all instructional decisions, and their administrator, their principal, is really kind of a budgetary facilitator. Mm-hmm. He does paperwork and legal issues and accountability things, and that frees the teachers to plan however they want to.
Well, that sounds good to me. I'm just naturally really sympathetic to the idea of people who are actually in the classroom making decisions about who's doing a good job for one thing, evaluation.
Right. But if I'm a new teacher, or if I'm a young, newer teacher, and I've started out under the thin contract, I've started out in this pilot system, and maybe for whatever reason it's not working for me, now I want to go to another type of a school, that's like a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've been at the same school for 10 years. I'm a little bit inbred when it comes to things like that. I just need to have more conversations
with
more people.
You've been at Roosevelt your whole career?
Not my whole career, but just about 10 years. 14, I spent 2 years at another high school, my alma mater, and then I had 2 years at a middle school, not too far from here, in Gardena. Gardena. It is kind of far from here. But, and then before that, 16 years as, in private business, I had my own businesses, and I worked in outside sales, which was really data-oriented, because you don't get paid if you don't produce, and you have to figure out how to do that.
Okay, I wanted to ask you, your principal comes and says, I need to know by next Tuesday how you're going to measure the success of your students.
Yes.
And how are you, what again are you using for your measurement?
I'm saying that you should be able to name your own metric.
But what's yours?
What's mine?
Can I ask?
I want my students to improve in their reading level as measured by the STAR test that we have, and then we use Accelerated Reader, and I use a variety of strategies to help that happen. I usually will target writing conventions so that my students know how to use their, and there, and its, and its, and place a comma properly. I want them also to be able to write an expository essay under timed conditions. I want them to be able to respond to reading, summarize that, whatever it was, to a text that they read, and then to elaborate on it. I want them to be able to write with proper topic sentence, because that's good organization, and provide supporting examples and details.
Now, this isn't really all these wouldn't be covered by the CST, of course.
Right.
Or, it would touch on some of them.
Yeah.
Could you just go by a standardized test like the CST? Before and after, and see if you made any difference.
I could, but it wouldn't be the ninth grade one. Because when my students come to me as ninth graders, their reading level is much lower. They're reading about third or fourth grade level, and your average Roosevelt student across the board 2 years ago was reading at fifth grade level, everybody taken into account. So I can't...
So maybe you could give them the fourth grade CST.
That would be fair, because that's where their reading and comprehension level is. But by the time they leave me, see, if I took those things that I just mentioned and I put them on a rubric that broke it down and graded independently for each of those things, and then I created a spreadsheet that showed how the students were achieving on those little standards, And then I measured their progress
regularly.
If I gave them the same kind of assignment and provided meaningful instruction, opportunities for practice, and all those kinds of things, by the end of the school year, I should see a real tightening up of that bell curve, right? I should see everybody.
This seems to me the type of thing that when, like, we at New TLA get together, we should be talking about what would we want to see improvement from our students in, but we don't. But I would like to have a group that does talk about that, a support group. I mean, I would go to it.
Great. Yeah, that's a good idea. I would like to see, I know that teachers are interested in this, and I got to tell you that when I hit the button that makes the chart, you know, when I've made the spreadsheet now to measure how my children are doing, and then when I hit that button to see the spread, oh God, it's like a stomach tightening moment, because I want to see, like a preponderance of the kids performing proficiently. And sometimes when it doesn't happen, it kills me. But then I have to regird my loins and kind of look again at the data.
Regird your loins. Okay.
And look at which particular students are not doing well. And then I'd think hard about addressing their needs. And sometimes that's not easy to do because, as you said earlier, we're all human. And if that little child is one of the children who is not easy to work with, then that creates an extra challenge.
But you, of course. I mean, they asked me at my last job interview, you know, what I do to succeed with students that are, you know, I forget what the term they used was. But I couldn't think of a whole lot of examples of me succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
At least this way, when I look at my numbers, then I know.
Right.
I know.
Right.
And I know where I'm doing well, and I know where I need to remediate, and I know for whom, which is the whole point of it.
Well, so do you think that teachers are now, like, one good thing about all the scrutiny on teachers in our country and today is that maybe it's no longer enough for teachers to go just by their intuition about how students are doing?
No, not at all.
Oh.
The first thing that struck me about our profession when I first became a teacher in 1998 was that nobody measured anything.
Right.
It just didn't seem like a good use of time.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to go in there every day and teach a lesson and I taught a lot, so it was a great day. Well, okay, but did they learn a lot?
Right.
And how do you know?
Right.
It just boggles the mind. So how can I spend money? How can I spend $80,000 on a teacher every year and not be able to say, okay, what did you do and how did you do and what are the results?
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
So you're talking about personal ways of assessing, and I think that's great. And then there's also the ways that are out there that are the standardized ways of assessing, which are CST, but that's only once a year.
Yeah.
Periodic assessment.
Periodic, which is a joke of a tool, but yeah.
Why is a periodic assessment a joke?
Because,
I mean, I've heard that.
Okay, I'll just say one thing about it.
Yeah.
I take the periodic assessment that my ninth graders take every year, and I wonder how many I got right.
Yeah, some of those questions are pretty... like, they ask the difference between an analogy and a metaphor for something.
Yeah, please, come on.
I really could not answer that question. No, I mean, not in general, but for a particular piece of writing.
I can't understand the questions, half of them, the way that they're worded.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So they're not really, they're targeted at where they wish our students were.
And the other thing is that the periodic assessment has a writing component, and you give a kid a holistic score.
Mm-hmm.
So if a kid has lousy writing but good ideas, they still fail.
Right.
So we need what I'm talking about, which is a rubric that's kind of broken down standard by standard so that you can measure the critical thinking ability versus the reading comprehension ability versus the writing ability versus the conventions.
Well, there should be like an English teachers union and not just a teachers union. And then we would be able to come up with stuff like this.
Uh-huh.
And not just a union, but like a support group.
Right. Yeah. And for science, too. And
actually,
writing should happen across the curriculum. So maybe your idea's got a lot of merit there. Good idea.
Great. So did we cover everything? I think we did.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It just occurs to me that for teachers who are in the same position that we are, you know, looking for a change of environment, I just have found it, I want to say this out loud, I found it so helpful to take this summer to try to remove all the negativity from my memories of this last school year. It was such a, I'm getting emotional.
Yeah.
Well, clearly all the negativity is not gone yet. But it was such a difficult year and such, so fraught with so much failure that I really had to think back about the wonderful things that have happened and look at my resume and just kind of regroup myself around the good and positive things. And participating in New TLA gives me so much hope for the future. It's a real necessary touchstone.
Well, I feel a little bit of that, too.
Sorry.
And no, I mean, hey, I've never had as bad a year as I just had. So maybe there's a memo going out or something. And
let's do what we have to do to just refocus on the positive things. Yeah.
All right. Well, Lisa, are you going to come back sometime?
Absolutely.
And you're always a force and presence at New TLA, so we appreciate that very
much. Oh, good, good. I hope to be a voice for positive change, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. That was good for Teacher's Talk today.